This is Talk Is Cheap on KPWLP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peace Works Independent Community Radio. All right, this week, Norman Solomon from the Encircle Films Q&A presentation back in December, because I've had so much going on that it's taken me all this time to get it on, and it's still historically relevant, because he even predicts the Iran War, which even he would say wasn't much of a stretch if you know the history of Israel. And we still can't get an international force in Israel. So my comment for this week, so nationalism, I went to the Rojava Emergency Center, is where you can get information on Rojava, and they're having I'm going to their seminar, on their information seminar, and right away they're talking about nationalism and how it relates to the autonomous zone in Rojava, and you know, which is an example of direct democracy working that was working. So nationalism came up in that one. Then I was at the farm workers boycott Sunnyside Mushrooms, the farm workers presentation by Nancy Bray, which I recorded that for you too, that will be played in the future. And again, I was talking to her husband about nationalism came up, talking about Central America. And also I'm talking to the socialists about nationalism. And so what we were saying about Central America is, you know, if you don't like our corporate puppet, then you end up with some hopefully benevolent dictator like Castro or somebody who then nationalizes all the industries. And they're nationalizing all the industries, including the press, because they're trying to stop outside influence. And so I just want to make it clear that what we want, I'm talking to the socialists too, and I kind of agree that we're probably going to have to nationalize all the industries in this country, because they're going to screw up the economy so badly. But even they are saying that that would be a transition, and what we ultimately want is, and just like any social justice movement, you want land reform. We want the land and the means of production in the hands of the people, not the government, not a centralized power. We want this flattened democracy where all the people that are affected by whatever decision you're making have a say in that decision. And that's how direct democracy and the consensus process works. So let's see, what else? No tax dollars spent. You know, your tax dollars are just being wasted right now. And yeah, don't worry, you know, there'll be a bailout coming up here that'll further ultimately result in the transfer of wealth and power to the rich, just like they always do, instead of actually helping people. So they charge us, they ruin the economy, they ruin the environment, and then you have to pay for it to be repaired. And let's just not ruin the environment and kill people in the first place. And rooftop solar, rooftop solar, rooftop solar. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. Up next, Norman Solomon. He also says that we should be down at Ron Wyden's office, picketing down at Ron Wyden's office, because Ron Wyden keeps voting to fund Israel, weapons in Israel. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. Support independent media.
Awesome. Well, thank you, David, and thank you to Encircle Films and everybody who's joining with us at this event tonight. Education, agitation, organizing is really a formula for making the kind of changes that are well overdue and really essential. I really would like to focus on Gaza, the Middle East, and U.S. media and political focus on, or out of focus on, what's going on in that region and has been going on for a long time. It's very difficult quite often for people to accept, acknowledge that the country they live in is engaged in genocide. And for several years now, we've been in a circumstance where the evidence is clear. Well over a year ago, Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch issued voluminous reports concluding that Israel has been engaging in genocide in Gaza. B'Tselem and Physicians for Human Rights Israel have come out with the same conclusion. And yet, the vast majority of the members of Congress, and that includes most Democrats, not only have refused to acknowledge that reality, but have continued to support arming the genocide with billions and billions of dollars. And so there's sort of a disconnect, I think, that exists among most elected officials in Congress and among the journalists, reporters, producers on the whole, to deal with that reality. When we listen to, for instance, I mean, I'm not even going to talk about particularly Fox News. I'm going to talk about the so-called liberal media. And so let's talk about the kind of stuff that comes through KLCC, where we're told that National Public Radio programs like All Things Considered and Morning Edition are giving us the news. They are presenting us with facts. And yet, this is sort of a liberal version of enabling and supporting genocide through silence and through failure to really provide the kind of information and give much voice to the realities from people who are suffering and mourning the consequences. I think of it as victims without victimizers. And so there has been not enough, but at times extensive coverage of what's happened in Gaza since October of 2023. Although what's been happening there and as well in the West Bank has pretty much fallen off the front pages or even the back pages of mass media. And so, even though when there was coverage, with few exceptions, we had the victims and then we had some aspersions on the humanity of the Israeli government, sometimes direct criticism. Although the convention is to criticize Netanyahu as though that was different than the state of Israel, as though Netanyahu and what he was doing was somehow separate from Zionism itself, from the history now since 1948 and then extended in 1967 of the basic suppression of human rights of Palestinian people. Well, that is really not still acceptable in the mass media, although it's changing and it's gradually changing. Not because people on high in power decided whether they were at the top executive offices of the New York Times or Washington Post or NPR that they were going to do even-handed coverage with a single standard of human rights. It's changed because of organizing among people like those of us who are gathered here tonight, who insisted through the day-to-day work of education and agitation and organizing, as I mentioned, that we not only could make change, but that this kind of change is essential. I refer to it as victims without victimizers because, as in the case of what's been going on in Gaza and on the West Bank, the victims are sometimes portrayed. There are narratives, there are stories that are presented, and sometimes it's quite heartrending. And sometimes it has been critical of Israel implicitly or even explicitly. But how many times have we heard in U.S. mass media a serious discussion of how President Biden and President Trump have been direct enablers in genocide? How much discussion are you going to hear in on KLCC or at the Register Guard when you read that, or in the Oregonian or other mass media, that by arming genocide, by arming mass murder, then the leaders of the US government are accomplices in genocide. They are directly participating in the genocide. We, I think, are likely to remember the horrible tragedy in Uvalde, Texas, where many students were killed. And there was some coverage of, well, where did the murderer get the weapons? Well, the murderer got the weapons from a gun shop. And the owner of the gun shop said, well, I'm not really culpable of providing the ammunition and the weaponry because I didn't know what it would be used for. And then people could debate whether that's an appropriate rationale or excuse, justification for what was done. Okay, so in that case, we're told the proprietor of the gun shop, the provider of the weapons and ammunition, didn't know what it'd be used for. But President Biden knew what the weapons were going to be used for, as billions and billions of dollars worth of weaponry were being continually shipped to Israel as the massacres, as the planned atrocities, as the genocide continued. And that is true of someone like Senator Wyden continuing to vote for arming genocide. It's true of most of the members of Congress, true of the occupant of the Oval Office 2 years ago, just as the occupant of the Oval Office today. And as I started out by saying, it's really difficult quite often to acknowledge personally, in terms of political discourse, in terms of participation in some sort of mass media, that, quote, our government is such an accessory to these horrific crimes that they're not only sporadic crimes, they're continual crimes. David mentioned that at Roots Action, we're very active, as with many groups, to try to turn this around. And I do want to encourage you to join up if you're not already getting our email alerts at rootsaction.org. Another group that I want to mention about media bias and media activism is FAIR, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. Been around since the mid-1980s, online at fair.org. Analyzes media problems, but also organizes and addresses how we can challenge mainstream media. When the New York Times runs an article with euphemisms about what's going on in the Middle East, FAIR will not only document the flaws and the double talk, the Orwellian speak, in the article, but also at the bottom of the analysis, provide an email address or phone numbers where people can directly contact and protest that kind of media spin. There is a website I also want to call your attention to, progressivehub.net, and it's an offshoot from Roots Action. We've helped to sponsor it. And progressivehub.net is really trying to fill a bit of a gap. We all go to websites that provide information about the awful events, the awful programs, the awful policies that the United States is involved in. But it's very unusual for that same article to tell us what we can do about it. And so the premise of progressivehub.net is that literally on the same page as describing and analyzing circumstances is an action item where in a matter of a minute or two, we can do something about it. Well, of course, individual, one of us can't make a big difference, but the whole history of social movements and what is being accomplished online is when members of Congress, for instance, get hundreds and hundreds of emails or phone calls, that is a constituent messaging that can really make a difference. Everything that we can be proud of in this country came from the bottom up, never handed down from people in power. And that's certainly true in countering and pushing back against what Martin Luther King Jr. called the madness of militarism. He was discussing it in 1967. It's with us in 2026. And the news tonight is simply, but horrifically, another indication that that madness is running wild with the latest indications that quite likely the United States is going to again attack Iran, completely unprovoked. And certainly, the figuratively speaking, cash registers are ringing with the paragon of virtue called the military-industrial complex. And I would just want to close by saying this is another instance where, pardon the cliche, we need to collect the dots, that there are not only victims, there are victimizers. There are the contractors who are making a killing, literally and figuratively, from these wars, from the warfare state. We have the opportunity, we have the capacity to organize to make that end. And I know those of us tonight gathering together, we want it to end. And if we can continue to do our work, that is where the hope is.
Thank you, Norman. All right, let's hear from Alex.
Thank you, Norman.
I will be repeating some of the things or highlighting some of the things that you already said, because we are talking about the same story. We are talking about the same genocide. So there are things that we certainly 100% agree with. And I want to say that I'm speaking on behalf of People for Justice and Peace in Palestine, and on behalf of People for Justice and Peace in Palestine, I want to thank you. Just for one moment, could members of People for Justice and Peace in Palestine just put your hand up? You don't have to stand up. All right. Thank you. Thank you for everything that you are doing. And we are trying to educate. We are trying to advocate. And we are trying also to donate so that we can bring relief to the people of Gaza and the people in the West Bank. This documentary really touches my heart, especially I'm a Palestinian. And when I was living in Jerusalem and in Bethlehem, every week I would go to Gaza on Thursday and I would teach a class. And then Friday morning, I'll drive back to Jerusalem. So I know the people of Gaza. I know their humanity. I know they are very loving and kind people. I know they are not like the media here in the United States try to sketch them for us as terrorists and, mean people and ugly people and so on. You know, what you saw in this film, especially in this film, really shows the humanity of the people in Gaza. They are really humans, just like us. They sing like we sing. They play like we play. They dance like we dance. They write. They do art like we do. They are real people like us. And like one of them said in one of the films, they are not numbers. They don't want to be numbers. Like 200 people were killed today and 50 people were injured. No, they are real flesh and blood like us. What I want to emphasize that Norman Solomon said, and really, this is so important. This is why we are doing this thing. This is why we are showing this film. It may be hard for you to hear this, but the reality is, as Norman said, we are fully complicit in this. I am an American citizen, and I pay my taxes. And my taxes are buying these bombs that have been dropped on Gaza and killing over 30,000 women and children, over 100,000 people. How many people are injured? How many people are still under the rubble? But at least 100,000 people have been killed in Gaza. Who killed them? My tax money, your tax money. We are really, really complicit. But we don't need to feel the guilt. We need to say to ourselves, what can we do about it? Where do we go from here? I don't want you to leave this place feeling the weight of your guilt. But I really want you to ask it. The question, since I am part of this, because you see, the president of the United States, he represents me and he represents you. And when he gives bombs and weapons to Israel to kill Palestinians, he is representing us in this. So please, just let your brain work and say to yourself, What can I do about this? I have few suggestions for us. I want to invite you to sign a petition outside for our senators so that they can stop arming Israel with billions of dollars. If you wish to do more, you may also donate money. There will be a box out there. Please be generous. Don't look for the smallest change you have in your pocket. The people in Gaza need the money. And what we do at People for Justice and Peace in Palestine, every penny that you donate will not go to run our organization. It will go to Gaza or to the West Bank. So be very generous. If you are able to give $1,000, give it. And whatever you are able to do, please don't look for the smallest change in your pocket to give. But don't leave the place without making a small donation, please. And if you wish to be informed about what we are doing, People for Justice and Peace in Palestine, there will be a tablet you can sign your name, and then we continue to send you updates and information about our activities. But thank you again for coming. I know it is painful, it is hard, especially to recognize that we are all complicit, but that's the reality that we need to take to heart.
Hello. Oh, I just wondered if there's any movement to resist paying taxes.
Yes, my bad.
Yeah, it seems like you have to start withholding the money. And the other thing, I think it would be good to really know, the statistics on how much is being spent on weapons, the weapons companies, and the profits they're making. There's a lot that we don't know. And that kind of knowledge would enable us to increase our resources.
So, Bonner, could you identify yourself and speak briefly to Olive's point? She's our local tax resister expert.
Yeah, I think that resisting paying taxes is a good strategy. And if you want to know more, there's an organization called National War Tax Resistance Coordinating Committee, and they have a really great website. And the website actually crashed quite a few times. They had to keep on making it bigger and bigger because so many more people are thinking about resisting. It's NewTRC, NWTRCC.org.
She also mentioned that People for Justice and Peace in Palestine is actually a committee that I'm proud to be a member of. It's made up of Jews, Palestinians, atheists, Christians,
Muslims.
Muslims, and agnostics. So go ahead, Norm.
There was a scene early in the film tonight of people scooping up spilling flour, and I flashed to a similar presentation I saw about the Warsaw Ghetto, where a similar scene happened to the starving inmates there. Yeah, except here we have 24/7 coverage through cell phones and modern technology, so we can't pretend that we don't know what's going on. The other point I want to make is when I was born in 1963, we had an administration, a president who was trying to stop Israel from going nuclear and opposing Israeli militarism. And when we talk about what happened to the Democratic Party, I think the coup in Dallas is a good place to start.
Other questions?
So we have a ceasefire. Did it do anything? It seems like it's just a ceasefire in name only. I mean, it's not quite the killing that we had before, but was it worth anything? Did it just let Israel off the hook? I can't believe that they wouldn't let the Russians go to the Olympics, as Russia, but they let the Israelis. But yeah, I just wanted for that answer about the ceasefire.
Did you want to comment on that, Norman?
Oh, well, there's a lot of euphemisms that go on, and what passes for a ceasefire is just a lower level of killing and murder. And, you know, as Orwell wrote about in his famous essay about political language, it's just a way of to manipulate people's perceptions and hide evil, if you want to use the word evil. So this is, you know, the constant struggle to challenge mainstream media, because the fact is that the vast majority of journalists in what we call mass media or imitating mass media, they're just imitating what their colleagues are doing. And the silence or the repetition compulsion has to be disrupted by us as activists.
Yeah, almost 1,000 people in Gaza have been killed since the so-called ceasefire.
Yeah.
And that's why a lot of people call it no ceasefire. It is, unfortunately, the word ceasefire does not fit there. Yes, there are no bombings like it used to be from the air, you know, and destroying buildings and killing a lot of people. But there is a lot of shooting from soldiers, Israeli soldiers, killing Palestinians almost on a daily basis. That is not ceasefire.
I have read that Israel is at the beginning stages of collapse, that people are leaving Israel, going to other places in the world. The economy is becoming more and more just a militarized economy. Could somebody speak to that, please?
As a Palestinian, I do not wish for Israel to collapse. I do not wish for the Israelis to be scared that they are running out to other countries. I wish Israelis and Palestinians can live in peace in that country we call the Holy Land, between the river and the sea. So it doesn't get me excited when you are right, Tom, many Israelis are leaving, and now the population between the river and the sea are 200,000 more Palestinians than Israelis. This means the majority is Palestinians, but I don't want to be the majority that will oppress a minority. I want both Israelis and Palestinians to find a way to build a country with peace and justice for all.
Even Thomas Friedman, who has been very supportive of Israel, is just writing one column after another in the New York Times, livid, upset, denouncing what Israel is becoming. Peter Beinart, who used to be a Zionist, has this book out almost a year ago now called Being Jewish After Gaza. And I think in terms of the departures of Israelis, to generalize, the ones who have some empathy for Palestinian people are much more likely to leave Israel. And it's part of a pattern where Israel itself is becoming a fascistic country. And Israel is a country that is built on the very concepts of Israel, but perhaps even more importantly, the current political, social atmosphere of Israel is fascistic. And I don't use the term lightly. There, the polling is very clear. And if you read an Israeli outlet like the newspaper Haaretz, they're one of the few Israeli media outlets that will really acknowledge that in some of their columns. So when people say, well, this isn't the real Israel, or Israel has departed from its path, I do not believe that that's the case. It just has continued to go on its path. I just mentioned that sort of replica of what we could call liberal pro-Israel Zionism is the organization J Street. Their motto is pro-Israel, pro-peace, pro-democracy, which is an absurd slogan. That's their mantra. That's their trademark. How can you be pro-Israel and pro-peace, let alone pro-democracy? It's just completely preposterous. And frankly, that's what any sort of pro-Israel position is at this point.
I'd like the two of you to reflect on what you think might be the best way to communicate with people making an anti-war movement succeed the way it did, I'd say, in the days of Vietnam, which most people in this room remember, when people in high school and college, you know, they had their eyes open. They saw what was happening. Everybody went to the network news show after dinner, and you saw the journalists tell the truth, and that pressured the parents and the lawmakers and eventually came around to a halt. And now, even though it's like there's people with cell phones in Auschwitz, this movie, you know, it's like it's right there and right in front of us. The information flow is not so simple and direct, and most of us, most people in society aren't getting it from, you know, a single mainstream media source, not much of which is fairly given. TikTok, this movie's formatted for TikTok, even that doesn't do it. What do you think is the way to influence people? I mean, should we have more puppet shows and artwork like the Gaza people are doing? That looks good to me.
Well, first, in terms of a historical note, I wrote about it in the book War Made Easy, How Presidents and Pundits Keep Spinning Us to Death. It's a common misconception. Of course, you're absolutely right that younger people, often agitated and organized on campuses and so forth, but actually there was very little anti-war content in mainstream media. And if people watched TV, they did not become more anti-war. The famous Walter Cronkite saying in early 1968 that the war had become a stalemate and couldn't be won, that was after Walter Cronkite cheerled for years the war. It's just a statistical reality. So if you do want to look at the War Made Easy book, this is sort of a myth that people had the Vietnam War come into their living room. In fact, there was very little carnage, very little bloodshed shown on TV, CBS, NBC, ABC, which are the only three networks at the time. The change came from organizers. The change came from people who read Ramparts magazine, who read independent, what we called underground newspapers, and they organized. And that just is a reality, in, I think, well-documented in history. As for what we do, there's no silver, pardon the expression, there's no silver bullet. I mean, it's a multiplicity of things. You've mentioned some of them, and we need to keep organizing. And if there's any media outlet or any medium that we can use, we need to use it.
That's short, yeah, I would say, yeah, there are two layers of activity. One, what we are doing right now here. And one is to reach to Washington, D.C. And I think we need to start thinking seriously about how can we get this president out of office and how can we get the Republicans out of the Senate and Congress. This is so, so important. But we have to work on the grassroots level in order to make the changes out there in Washington, D.C.
If I could just jump in, I completely agree. And let me ask this question. How often have you heard of a picket line going on in Oregon at the office of Senator Wydener Merkley? How often has a picket line gone up from the local congressperson, the woman representing the Eugene area? It's very rare. We're so deferential, we're acculturated so deferentially to defer to people because they're elected, because they do some things we like. There should be hundreds of picket lines around district offices of members of Congress on the issue of aid to Israel.
Alex, just before the movie tonight, I sent you and the other members of the PJPP an article on the front page of today's New York Times. And there's a whole full page thing, the pictures that follows in, about
series of private schools in Gaza that were brainchild of a Palestinian-American neurosurgeon who has volunteered over there in Gaza. And I was very encouraged by reading this article because it talked about how these schools teach love and not hatred towards Jews. Instead of saying the evil of the Jews and Muhammad, it says teach Muhammad's love for the Jews and other things like that. And when I met with Senator Wyden in January in Florence, when I spoke to the senator, and I said, instead of sending all this money for bombs, could we fund programs that bring people together and teach Palestinians and Israelis to see each other as human beings? And he said to me, but we have to do something about Hamas. Okay. And you spoke a moment ago. You said the people of Gaza are loving people. And I believe that. Most of the people are loving people. But there are people there that have a lot of anger, and these people participated in October 7th. And we cannot deny that there are people there that are very angry and not loving. And so how do we respond to Senator Wyden when he says, but we have to do something about Hamas?
Yeah, we have to do something about Ben-Gavir. We have to do something about Smutrich. We have to do something about the settlers. We have to do something about Netanyahu. I mean, if you put the on a scale, if you put Hamas, but if you put them on a scale, believe me, the Israeli side will go way down compared to the Palestinian side.
Yeah, something I would add, and I happen to be a Jewish American. Let's look at the numbers of Israelis who have been killed in the last 3 years by Palestinians, and look at the numbers of Palestinians who've been killed by Israelis with the U.S. military support. Does that not answer your question? Doesn't that make it ridiculous to talk about how Palestinians in Gaza need to be taught to love Israelis? Are we going to be told that Jews in the Warsaw Ghetto should have been taught to love the Nazis who were killing them?
Thank you. That was our comedy tune in which Mick breaks the string on purpose. That was all on purpose, right? He did it on purpose, right? Michael White, Bill Bruford, Mick Karn. You know my name. Okay, bye. On the minute they're all in the toilet, you know what I mean? names, right? I don't need to say it again, but I've got it anyway. Michael White on the trumpet and the conch shells. Bill Bruford on those funny plastic things. Mick Karn on that. And, okay, good night.